This episode is brought to you by Chris Salee, your local health markets insurance agency. Creative solutions for your health, Medicare, and life insurance needs. Personalized advice at 503-678-5768.
This episode is also brought to you by our good friends at Canby Foursquare Church. Since 1978, they've been a place to grow, connect, and serve. If you're looking for a church to participate with virtually during this COVID-19 lockdown, you can find their streaming services Sundays at 9 a.m. on their website or their Facebook page, and check in with their Facebook page throughout the week for encouragement, service times, and other good news. Visit them at canbyfoursquare.com or search Canby Foursquare on Facebook.
Welcome to the Canby Now podcast,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
Hey, friends. Welcome to the Canby Now podcast. I'm James Walton. Let's read the news. Hey, it's good news, Canby. Playgrounds are open. Record scratch. Oh, wait. Never mind. No, they're not. Sorry about that. On Wednesday morning, Mayor Brian Hodson told the Canby Now podcast and later posted on his political Facebook page that playground equipment would reopen to the public later that day for the first time in months. The parks team is cleaning and removing signage on all play structures this morning, Mayor Hodson said. All city parks will be 100% open for use by the end of the day. It was a statement the mayor had to regretfully retract just a few hours later.
So earlier today, I kind of jumped the gun and announced that playground equipment would be open for Canby's children to run and play on. I was incorrect in making that announcement. Under Governor Brown's executive order 2025, playground equipment is still closed until after July 6th. The city received an email from the Environmental Health Administration, their public health division, informing us, or me specifically, that we should not have the playgrounds open. So anyways, the equipment is cleaned, is ready to go for when we can open them up for our kids to play on.
The mayor apologized for the confusion, but explained in another Facebook post why he had been so quick to jump the gun. Our kids, man, they need to run, to climb, and be social, basically be kids, he said. I wanted our children to have the opportunity to return to some normalcy. The playgrounds are cleaned and ready to go for when they can open. My hope is that Governor Kate Brown will seriously reevaluate our playgrounds now that we are in phase one and see the importance this play is for our children's well-being. Playgrounds can reopen in phase two of the governor's plan, which Clackamas County can apply for if it meets the minimum criteria after a minimum of 21 days in phase one. With the exception of play equipment, all city parks and facilities are open to the public, including Community Park, which has been closed to motor vehicle traffic since March 25th, and public bathrooms. City officials remind residents to practice social distancing, wear a face covering if possible, and wash your hands frequently, which, by the way, is a great thing to do every time you visit a public bathroom, even when it's not in the midst of a global pandemic. Man sustained minor injuries Saturday evening after being thrown through a plate glass window during a fight at Roxy's Island Grill, a Hawaiian barbecue restaurant located at Canby Square, the Safeway-anchored shopping center on the southwest end of town. Canby Fire emergency medical technicians responded to the scene and the man was taken to the hospital. Canby police also responded, but no arrests or citations were made on Saturday night. Police were unable to provide details about what led to the incident that night, and a representative of the restaurant also declined comment. The investigation was ongoing this week as police continued to conduct interviews with witnesses and those involved. At this point, investigators have confirmed that the victim and suspects came to Roxy's from Pat's Acres Racing Complex, lending credence to early rumors that the fight had been over race results at the well-known go-kart track. However, Dalton Egger with Pat's Acres told the Camping Out podcast they hadn't hosted any races that weekend. He said, "Well, we had a drift event, so there wasn't any competition, but sometimes there is beef between drivers for some reason." He said he had not heard about the fight at the restaurant Saturday, nor was he aware of any such incidents or disagreements at Pat's this weekend. Oh, that is very unfortunate for Roxy's, and we absolutely do not appreciate our drifters causing problems for other people, he said. Saturday, May 23rd was the first day restaurants, bars, and other establishments in Clackamas County could begin opening for dine-in service after the COVID-19 shutdown, arousing some concerns that the incident stemmed from the new safety guidelines or other coronavirus-related tensions. But that does not appear to be the case. Nothing has come up in our investigation regarding social distancing or masks, Canby Police Lieutenant Jose Gonzalez said. Our detectives don't believe the victim and suspects knew each other, but we are still investigating the case. A Baker County Circuit Court judge has refused to vacate his ruling, finding that Oregon Governor Kate Brown's coronavirus executive orders were legally invalid and therefore null and void. The Oregon Supreme Court, which is reviewing the case and has temporarily stayed his ruling, which is in effect keeping the governor's orders in place for the time being, had given Judge Matt Shurtcliffe until 5 p.m. Tuesday to either vacate the order or present a case explaining why he would not. In a brief letter to the attorneys on both sides of the case Tuesday morning, Judge Shurtcliffe did neither, simply stating that he has elected to stand by his original ruling. The state now has until Thursday to file a brief with the Supreme Court in support of its motion to dismiss Shurtcliffe's decision, and the plaintiffs in the original case, which includes 10 churches and 21 others who sought the injunction, will have until Tuesday to respond. A similar case raising constitutional concerns on behalf of business owners was filed earlier this month in U.S. District Court by two law firms, including one based in Canby. However, the judge in that case denied the attorney's request for an injunction, saying their federal claims were unlikely to succeed. When Governor Kate Brown ordered dining establishments closed across the state except for to-go and delivery orders, it created unprecedented challenges for local restaurant owners, most of whose business plans didn't outline contingencies for a global pandemic. Now, 10 weeks later, the county has entered the governor's phase one, allowing restaurants, bars, and other establishments to reopen under new safety guidelines, and many of those same owners are expressing thanks to their faithful supporters who helped them stay afloat during the takeout days. In talking with local eateries, one name that comes up again and again is Wilson Construction, a multi-generational family-owned company that began over 65 years ago in Troutdale, but has long been headquartered in Canby. The company specializes in the design and construction of electrical infrastructure and is one of the region's largest privately held utility contractors. During the COVID-19 shutdown, the company and its longtime president, Don Wilson, made a habit of ordering lunch for their entire staff from a different locally owned restaurant every day of the work week and picking up the tab each time. Wilson has been great to not only our business, but many others, every weekday for the entire COVID shutdown, said Michael Ebner of Ebner's Custom Meats, Our day was Wednesdays. We've sent ribs, brisket, pulled pork, and one of my favorites, a good old meatloaf sandwich. That the construction firm would have such a taste for Ebner's is not really a surprise, since some of their sandwiches are piled so high I'm pretty sure you'd need a forklift or other heavy equipment to handle them. What Wilson Construction has done has gone above and beyond, said Ebner. They have not only been supporting us little guys, but have also given their crews some pretty good lunches in the process. All of us at Ebner's have appreciated the support tremendously. Joan Monin, owner of the Wild Hair Saloon in Canby in Oregon City, has personally delivered lunch to the company's crews each week throughout the shutdown. Canby on Mondays, Woodburn on Thursdays. He and his company by far have been my best customers since I opened, she said. Everyone that works for him is always so respectful and nice to my staff. It speaks volumes about him and the type of people he hires. They're all around great people. Ken and Lori Aragati, owners of the Backstop Bar and Grill, estimated that they saw more than 50 orders a week coming in from Wilson's two local offices. We couldn't have been more blessed to be a business in the community of Canby, Ken Aragati said on Facebook this week. The support that we have all felt will never be forgotten. It is because of you and businesses like Wilson Construction that we will get to reopen our doors. Last week, Canby High School and the local community made a big gesture to show their support of the class of 2020. A 27,000-pound boulder in the heart of the school's campus, which will serve as a lasting memorial to seniors' achievements and sacrifices during this unprecedented school year. The donation was placed Monday morning just in time for the school's virtual walkthrough graduation ceremony, which took seniors through various activities and rites of passage throughout the week. Of course, not everyone has access to a rock quarry and the heavy machinery it takes to leave such a tribute, so seniors began making their marks with smaller but much more colorful tokens. These baby rocks were not something administrators at CHS were expecting, but something they quickly embraced. We would love more seniors to add their senior rocks, Associate Principal Kimmy Carroll told the Came Out podcast. I think it would be cool to see how many we could get. Officials also plan to colorize the Mama Rock at some point, but believe it or not, painting a 6-foot-tall boulder that weighs over 13 tons is more challenging than one that fits in the palm of your hand. We are working on the plan, Carol said. It's just so huge. Administrators hope the tribute of baby rocks grows this week and next in advance of graduation on June 5th. Though the ceremony has, of course, been canceled, students and parents will be lined up on campus that day to collect their diplomas, awards, and programs. The footage that was shot last week will culminate in a unique graduation video for seniors, families, and the community to enjoy. It will be released on the night of June 5th. For photos, find the story on our website at canbynowpod.com. And now, the segment we like to call Police Beat, where we read you the police blotter for April 7th through the 20th. On the 7th, around 8 in the morning, there was a response to a report of a stolen vehicle on Northwest 2nd. Then later on April 8th, report of a person passing forged bottle return slips at a grocery store. Officers responded to the call and located the suspect, who was detained on a parole violation warrant. 11 p.m., officers located a group of individuals at a closed park. One juvenile was taken into custody on a felony warrant, and a second individual was cited for being a minor in possession of marijuana and alcohol. At 12:02 p.m., report of a theft after an unknown person made an unauthorized purchase using a victim's identity. Then later that night, an officer was dispatched to a possible DUII driver. Officers located and stopped the vehicle. The driver was cited for DUII, failing to maintain a lane, and driving without a license. His vehicle was towed from the scene. All that happened on South Sequoia Parkway. Then on the 9th at 10:50 a.m., report of a person who had previously been trespassed from a business returning to the location and committing theft. At around 5 in the afternoon, a report of identity theft when an unknown person accessed a victim's bank account. At 6, officers responded to the report of a theft at a pharmacy. And then in the evening at 9:30, a report of a theft after an unknown person purchased a cellular phone using a victim's identity. April 10th, around noon, report of a theft after an unknown person purchased a cellular phone using a victim's identity. Those are two separate instances. 8:13 p.m., officers responded to a report of a suspicious person in a restaurant parking lot. The intoxicated suspect was located nearby and arrested for disorderly conduct, harassment, resisting arrest, felon in possession of a restricted weapon, and a probation violation detainer. On the 11th, around 2 in the morning, a driver was arrested for DUII, reckless driving and criminal mischief, after hitting a parked car and attempting to drive away up on Northeast 12th Avenue. At 9 in the morning, a report of a theft from a parked vehicle overnight on Southeast 10th. And then around 9 that evening, an uninsured vehicle with an expired registration was stopped. Drugs, drug paraphernalia, and what appeared to be stolen mail were located inside the vehicle. On the afternoon of April 12th, there was response to a motorcycle crash. Then later at 7 p.m., response to a report of a domestic disturbance. And then on April 13th, around 2 in the afternoon, report of an identity theft after an unknown person made several fraudulent purchases using the victim's PayPal account. And then later, there's more report of identity theft after an unknown person opened an unauthorized credit account in the victim's name. On the 14th of April, around 2 in the afternoon, there was a suspect arrested for shoplifting. Then at 3:30, a response to a report of domestic disturbance. At 4 p.m., response to a report of a theft of fuel from a gas station. And then at 7:30 p.m., the driver was arrested for DUII alcohol on Northwest 12th. On April 15th, at around 6 in the morning, a driver traveling at a speed in excess of 100 miles per hour was cited for reckless driving on Highway 99E. 6:05 p.m., response to a vehicle and a motorcycle crash. The driver of the vehicle was cited for failure to yield. On the 16th, around 8:30 in the p.m., response to a report of a person returning to a store after previously being trespassed. The individual was cited for criminal trespass and released. On the 17th, around 5 in the morning, there was a response to a report of domestic disturbance. And then at 10 p.m. that evening, response to a report of suspicious person accessing the dumpsters of a business. Officers located the individual nearby and advised them that they had been trespassed from the location. April 18th, around noon, there was a response to a report of a domestic disturbance. And then at 2 p.m., report of a hit-and-run damage to a parked vehicle. At around 8:30 p.m., driver arrested for DUII alcohol on South Pine Street. And then later that evening at 9, there was a response to a vehicle stuck in an overflow ditch at a fast food restaurant drive-thru. On the 19th, around 10 p.m., the driver was arrested for DUII alcohol on South Hazeldale Way. And then on the 20th, around 3:40 in the afternoon, there was a report of theft after a victim was notified that an unauthorized credit account had been opened using their identity. Then on April 20th at 8:03 p.m., a speeding driver was arrested for DUII alcohol on South Ivy Street.
Canby, DirectLink is here for you. In these troubling times, the last thing anyone should have to worry about is how to stay connected to their loved ones, work, education, and news. The expert staff at DirectLink are all based right here in Canby and are committed to keeping those critical internet, video, and voice connections on and strong for their members. They have signed the Keep Americans Connected pledge from the FCC, which means they have promised to keep students online to continue their studies, local businesses connected to their customers and employees, and all their members virtually in touch with what matters most to them, no matter how far away they may be. So if you have DirectLink as a provider, go ahead and reach out to your loved ones on a traditional telephone, watch a child's home recital over an internet video chat, download your favorite local podcast, I mean, do we even have to ask what it is, or enjoy a favorite movie at home, because DirectLink will keep our friends, neighbors, and local businesses connected, no matter what. We're all in this together.
Hey friends, it's me again with a little quick segment we like to call our Patreon shout-out. We'd like to extend our undying gratitude to the many members of the Canby Now Plus membership, but especially this week to Susan Stewart. You see, Susan is obviously one of the coolest people in the world because she helps support the Can Be Now podcast, provide the kind of accurate, timely, and balanced journalism that this era so desperately needs. If you would like to help us continue to invest in this work that we so deeply love and, frankly, become one of the coolest people in the world like Susan, you can become one of our supporters on Patreon by visiting canbenowpod.com/plus. Susan, if you're listening, thank you so much from all of us here at the Can Be Now Podcast.
All right, joining us on the Can Be Conversation today, finally, after months of trying to work something out, is Olivia Harms, locally born, homegrown Can Be singer-songwriter. Hi, Olivia.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How about you?
Very good, thank you. Happy Memorial Day.
Yes, you as well, recording this on Memorial Day this week. So you have some cool news. You've been doing music for most of your life, grew up in a very musical family, obviously, which I'm sure we'll talk about if folks don't already know. But yeah. Just recently, there's some songs and an album you've been working on for some time, right, that you finally decided to pull the trigger on and record, right?
Yeah, that's correct. So my mom is Joni Harms, and I'm sure you're all familiar with that.
Local country legend.
Yeah, she's so lucky to have her. And I've been working on it, my new project, for quite a while. Been singing ever since I was little. I sang a lot through high school at Canby High, through FFA and other little events here and there. Always the Clackamas County Fair. Recorded my first album when I was 16, so that was quite a while ago. Different sound than I have now at almost 25, so it's a little bit different. Way past due after college. My parents said, all right, now you can pursue music if that's truly what you want to do. And so I went straight for it and started going to Nashville every couple months, and I've been doing that for the past 3 years. And finally, after going, 6 to 8 times a year, have enough songs and connections that I decided it was finally time to release my first big girl album. And so we'll see. It's probably going to get released sometime this summer, and I'm really excited for it. So I hope that you guys will be proud of your Can Be Girl.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, congratulations. That's sounds like such a labor of love. That's really interesting to have spent so much time working on the material and the songs. Did you sort of see like some personal growth and evolution in kind of the content and the sound as you're piecing together, I imagine?
Absolutely. It's almost like going to college in another form, because as a songwriter, there's no specific rules. The content is, limitless. There's so many different ways that you can craft a song. So it was a big learning experience for me to go back and kind of meet a plethora of songwriters and go through this cobweb of learning about different people and how they craft a song and what their style is, and learning from each person as I go along, or saying, okay, this one, I always have good luck writing with them, and kind of keeping them in my hip pocket as I go forward and kind of figuring out what works best for me. So it was a big learning experience. And I noticed a lot of the songs that I have written in the last year and a half have been more the ones that I chose to record just from that learning experience.
Yeah. In terms of genre, did you kind of stay true to those country roots a little bit, or how does that line up as far as maybe kind of what genre you fit in with these songs?
Yeah, I definitely did. I was born and raised listening to traditional country music.
Sure.
So that's kind of where my heart lies. And if you're familiar with my mom's music, that she's a country western sort of genre. And I've always loved all types of music. I think that there's a time and a place for all the different genres. But personally, I've always loved the twin fiddles and the steel guitars and the really heartbeat of the traditional country music. And so in my music, I kind of went down that lane trying to pick and choose from some of my favorite things from like the genres of the 70s country music, bringing in a little bit of the 90s, but all tying it together in a modern way that it doesn't sound like you're listening to your grandparents' records as far as content, but the sound is still kind of traditional and still lies in that old country roots type of way.
Yeah, I love that. A little bit of the nostalgia with the more modern sound, kind of fusing it all together. What sort of themes did you touch on in your songwriting? You mentioned that it's a lot of the kind of more recent work in terms of the songwriting.
Sure. Well, you know, good country songs always touch on heartbreak and love and all those good things. So I do have a couple heartbreak songs. I have a couple flirty songs. There's one on the record called Hey There Cowboy. And I wrote that actually in January, one of my last trips. I was supposed to record my album in March before COVID happened, and I had to postpone it. And I had rescheduled it for April, being optimistic that everything would kind of pass over, and it didn't.
Yeah.
Then I had rescheduled it again for May, and we were finally able to make that happen. I was like, I'm not going to reschedule it again. I'm just going to pray and hopefully everything will work out. And it did. But when I was in Nashville in January, I had just gotten out of a writing appointment and I was driving down the road trying to get back to where my little apartment is in Nashville, and I ended up going like 20 miles too far because I was writing and driving at the same time. So there's a song that kind of touches on that. My life, I have a little tribute to my life. It's called Gypsy. I tend to travel around a lot for what I do, and I don't stay in the same place for very long. So it's a little bit about me. I try to touch on a lot of different things. I think if you're going to make an album and have a cohesive batch of songs, you know, when you get through all 10 of them, you don't want to get done and say, oh, I just listened to the same content or the same song over and over again. You want to try and have a good batch of different things and have them be diverse and cover different subject matter. So that's what I tried to do.
Cool. Yeah, I love that. We're excited to hear it. And it is cool how it's sort of a little bit of a snapshot of your life at this time, you know, in that way.
Yeah. Absolutely. You know, that's the best thing you can do as an artist, is for people to better understand my style and my life, is to just give myself an open book and say, this is my life. The songs are written about me and my experiences, and hopefully they help you or give you some sort of joy or entertainment of some sort, right?
Right. Well, obviously, elephant in the room, you mentioned the COVID stuff. I'm sure so many other people are really feeling for our music artists and live entertainers that we love in this time. Obviously, you know, the summer that you were probably expecting in January has just completely changed. No county fair, like you said, that you always perform at and all that kind of stuff. Can you talk a little bit more about that? Just how the COVID stuff has affected you, and maybe if it led to this decision to, let's just go ahead and move forward with this project with recording.
Yeah, sure. Well, that's one of the main parts of my career, is traveling around, as I said. So it does throw a wrench in things. And I have done a couple Facebook Lives. Those have been really helpful. Mm-hmm. I'm lucky that I have been put in a position where I'm not suffering as much as other artists I know out there. Mm-hmm. I'm just kind of camped out with my parents here in Canby for a little while.
Yeah. Well, that sounds horrible. No, I'm just kidding.
They're just great. I'm like, have them.
Ken and Joni.
Of me and my two dogs. Yeah. There's been lots of music. My mom and I have had a whole bunch of opportunities to write together and do little COVID parody songs and things. But I've done the Facebook Lives, and I think it's a great outlet for musicians to play and still be able to perform. But I personally really miss the interaction of, you know, seeing people out in the crowd, because that's where I do it. I don't do it for, you know, to be famous or anything. I love to see the connections that are made through music. Yeah. And if one of my songs can impact somebody and make them smile or make them feel. And so even though there's still the comment option on Facebook Live. I still really miss the personal connection
that like button, right?
Yeah, exactly. So that's been different. And of course, lots of things have been rescheduled. My Nashville trip was rescheduled, like I said, 2 times. Plenty other events and concerts throughout the summer have been canceled or rescheduled. And it's hard for someone like me to adjust to that. It's been an interesting 2 months because I'm used to running around and, you know, packing and then unpacking and jetting off to the next place to go right. play music. So it's been very different to get used to sitting still and taking time to appreciate family and just like the simpler things. I think that's been really good for all of us to have that opportunity to just sit still for a little while and realize that we don't have to be moving at such a fast pace all the time.
Yeah.
But it definitely has impacted the sure. musician. For sure. And I was all excited. I got two small offers when I was in Nashville to play at a restaurant over the summer.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think I've been that excited to accept a gig offer in a long time. So right. I'm excited to get back out there and play music where I can in the small venues with limited people.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking as someone who has, and I mean zero musical talent myself, I just imagine that would be a huge adjustment to not have that sort of instant feedback, you know, that you're doing a good job or, you know, that back and forth with the audience. That's got to be just really, really different.
Yeah, it has been. I mean, the likes and the comments are always appreciated. Or if I post a video, I mean, the praise on Instagram or Facebook is always really appreciated. And I really, you know, it means a lot to me when I see that. But it's a whole nother level when you can see that if someone connects to, you know, Traveling Soldier, I like to cover that song a lot by the Dixie Chicks. And if they connect to that and I can see that it's, you know, really bringing them some joy, they're feeling it, that's when I know I'm doing my job well. So it has been different to kind of you know, try to figure out how to do my job without seeing people.
Right.
That's been an adjustment for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and definitely, one thing too, though, that maybe is a little bit of a silver lining is you appreciate that more, right? Those things that you kind of take for granted, like you mentioned, you know, there's got to be just so much excitement for that moment when you are able to be back on stage and have actual yeah. human people in front of you, right? That's not just your mom or your dogs, right?
I know. Yeah, for sure. There's so many things after this, that we have taken for granted that I promise I will never do again. If I get an invitation to go somewhere, I'm going to go. I don't care if it's midnight, like we're going, because right. take for granted that human interaction and being able to go out and see your friends and, you know, just share the little things in life with them instead of having to do it over Zoom or.
Right. yeah.
It's,
yeah.
different world for sure.
Right. As we're recording this on Zoom, that was a little on the nose. Can you tell us a little bit more about your relationship with your mom and what it was like growing up with her and kind of that influence on your life? Was it crazy or, I mean, what was it like?
I'm so blessed. My mom is my best friend. There's a funny story. I never really had the biggest choice in the matter. I mean, I did. I was born 2 days before she sang at the Portland Speedway. She was playing with Clint Black and Lori Morgan and the Tractors, and she was just scheduled for this great show. And so I was hanging out a little too long, so she went into the doctor and had me induced so she could get to a show 2 days later. She's a tough cookie. So 2 days later, she brought me out on stage, and that was my first appearance on stage, and
you'll never forget it, right? I mean, that's just
2 days old. Never forget it. Yeah, great first impression.
Yeah, yeah.
But after that, I just always tagged along with her. I remember being 4 or 5, and she'd have me come up on stage and sing "I Want to Be a Cowboy's Sweetheart," and I dance around, and I always loved it. It was just such a fun way to grow up and have her always be teaching me new things. And I think it also gave me a real respect for people. She taught me to always sit and listen and be kind and understanding when someone has a story that they want to share about how they've connected with the songs that you've sang that evening. So I was very lucky. And then when I started writing my own little songs at 9 or 10, no matter how terrible they probably were, she always sat patiently and listened and had advice for me to kind of tweak them or how I could fix them. And then I remember my first song that I was really excited to play for her was one I wrote about Canby. And I went downstairs and I knocked on the door of her office and I said, "Hey, do you have a couple minutes?" I think I was like 12. And so I sat down and I played it for her, and I was expecting some of her feedback on how to maybe tweak it here or there, but she just said that she wished that she would have thought of it first. So that is a pretty big compliment, and ran with that and just kept on songwriting, and she's just been my biggest supporter ever since. I'm so lucky to have her. She was kind enough to come with me to Nashville this last 10 days and do my harmonies, because there's nothing like family harmonies, and just, I can't say enough nice things about her. She's the best, and I'm so lucky to have such a good mom that set a great example for me and tags along with me on some of my adventures now.
Yeah, that's awesome, and it is good to hear. Yeah, some positive, functional family. You know, that you guys support each other and whatnot. That's awesome. So,
yeah, no, for having to keg up here with my family for a while,
right.
I'm very. There, we all get along, and we've all had a really good time together. We cook, and Mom and I probably play music a little too loud in the kitchen sometimes, but we're living it up.
Yeah, that's awesome. What was it like to fly in the COVID days?
Yeah, it was bizarre. I have a whole new appreciation for all of the frontline workers. I tell you what, after wearing the mask through the airport and on the plane for, I guess it was a total of maybe 8 hours or so, the back of my ears were hurting. Sure. And I was like, my goodness, these people that are doing that every day. It gets hot in there, especially in Nashville when it was humid.
Yeah.
I thought that I'm just waiting to die here, you know, with the going on in your mouth. It's so hot.
Yeah.
Humid. So, I mean, shout out to all the people that are out there doing the front lines, because the flying gave me a whole brand new meaning of how hard they're working for us. The planes were about half full. I was surprised at how many people were flying. I think with some of the regulations lifting, I think there's a lot of people that are excited to get back out there and have a little bit of normalcy back in their life. And all the middle seats were not available, so it gave you some social distancing, and I didn't feel threatened at all. They were very, very clean, and I think they have the HEPA filters in all of their aircraft, so I didn't feel threatened or non-safe at any time.
That's good. Yeah, that humidity. I grew up in Kentucky, so I know just what you're talking about, and it hits you the second you step off that plane, right? Just like a wave of just instant regret. Like, can I go home?
All the time. Yeah, it never ceases to surprise me. I've been going to Nashville, like I said, for the last 3 years, and you grew up there, and you still get shocked when you go home. It's right. Like, oh, I forget how hot and muggy it is. It's its own thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're almost out of time here, Olivia. Is there any last thing that you can tell us that you're either most excited about, or maybe a way that people can follow you and check you out and get updates about when this album's going to drop?
Yeah, absolutely. The best way for people to stay tuned is probably follow me on Facebook, was just Olivia Harms, or follow me on Instagram, Olivia Harms. You can always check my website to see if I'm going to be playing anywhere, social distancing practices playing.
Right.
And that's just olivia13.com. And I'll be posting things. We're kind of waiting to test the waters to see if there's any opportunities coming about in Nashville before we set a release date, just to kind of wait it out and see how everything plays out. But music should be available on all streaming platforms by the end of the summer, for sure. I'm hoping by Labor Day at the latest. So just stay tuned. And I would be most excited to see what my hometowners think of the music. I want them proud, and I hope that they like it, and I hope that they kind of say, oh yeah, that sounds like Olivia Harms. Yeah, we know her.
awesome. Did any of the COVID parody songs make it on there?
They didn't make it on there, but
Disappointing.
You can always, if you missed out on the COVID parody songs, they're on Facebook and Instagram, so you can always go on there and have a look at those.
Awesome. Well, Olivia, such a delight to talk to you. Thanks for taking time out, and best of luck to you on this new album. I can't wait to hear it. It's going to be exciting.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. Thanks for having me on, and I look forward to doing it again sometime.
Absolutely. We'd love to have you anytime.
All right. Well, you take care and stay safe.
Yeah. You too.
Thanks.
Joining us once again on the Can Be Now podcast is Derek Hill of Advantage Mortgage. He joins us on the line, of course. How are things in the industry right now with all the crazy stuff going on?
It's a little crazy, but not too crazy. I mean, we definitely have seen some things tighten up. Obviously, with any kind of uncertainty, banks tend to tighten their guidelines. So the great thing about being a broker is that even though some of our lenders are tightening up, we have others that aren't. We have a lot of lenders that are just status quo. They're like, hey, we still have all the same channels. We still have all the same credit score requirements. Interest rates may be a little bit higher because of the level of risk, but they're still funding loans. So actually March was one of the biggest months of our company's funding. So
wow.
we're still funding loans. There's still people out there buying. There's still people out there selling. We have to make sure that we're not, spreading the virus and whatnot. But yeah, everything's still moving along.
Cool. So how can people get in touch with you right now?
The easiest way is just call the office, 503-266-5800, or send us an email, derek@findtheadvantage.com. But just call the office and we'd be happy to help.
Awesome. Thanks, Derek. Hang in there.
All right. You as well. Derek Hill, NMLS 50183, Equal Housing Opportunity.
And finally on this episode, it's Can Be Then, which is brought to you by The Book Nook, Canby's amazing local bookstore and gift shop. It's your source for new and used books, comic books, audiobooks, vintage books, and well, anyway, you get the idea. It's all things books across from the Backstop Restaurant in downtown Canby, now reopened for in-store browsing. Yes! $24. That's how much it cost you in 1904 to join the Maxburg Mutual Telephone Company, which was formed on January 14th of that year. And if you could furnish your own telephone, well, all the better. In that case, you could access the magic of telephony for just $9. Maxburg Mutual brought the first telephone service to the area in the form of an independent cooperative, one that still exists today as DirectLink. Like those other telephone co-ops across the United States, its history is an example of democracy in action. The independent telephone industry was developed throughout the country by farmers. Unable to receive telephone service in the small rural communities where they lived and worked, these hard-working, self-reliant, industrious folks did what they always do. They worked together, pooled their resources, and they built their own. Maxburg Mutual did not go by that name for long. Nor did it stay in Maxburg, wherever that is. Members voted to relocate the service to Canby in 1905, 1 year after it was founded. The next year, service demand had outpaced the co-op's original four-line switchboard, and a new one was installed that could accommodate up to 50 lines. At first, they equipped it for just 15. The new switchboard cost a hefty sum, $150, but I'm sure the growing number of Canby residents who could now phone such exotic places as Molalla, Oregon City, Markham, and New Era felt it was worth every penny. Switch tenders, or operators as they were more commonly known, were paid not by the hour, but by the call. 3 cents for personal calls and 5 cents for business. History does not preserve how much the parents of teenagers had to pay per text message in those days, but we assume the costs were substantial. In 1907, an effort began to relocate the co-op to Canby. The momentum grew slowly but steadily for several years until a meeting of the Maxburg Board in 1911 recognized the formation of a new entity, which was given a real mouthful of a name, Canby Exchange of Mutual Companies. The moniker was soon shortened to simply Canby Cooperative Telephone Association. By then, the co-op included farmer lines, or companies, in Maxburg, New Era, Central Point, Mundorf, East Canby, Barlow, Union Hall, Riverside, Mill Creek, and Oak Grove. In 1920, the Canby Cooperative Telephone moved into its sparkling new offices on 2nd Street, opposite Canby State Bank. It was also outfitted with a new 100-line switchboard. The move from its original location on A Street across the railroad tracks was completed the week before by the company's longtime lineman and general repairman, Russell Scramlin. The purchase of the property had been masterminded a year earlier by Franz Kraxberger, an early Canby mover and shaker in early Canby, who was also the president of the Canby Cooperative Cheese and Produce Company, but the move had been delayed because of the needed supplies, equipment, and material. So for its first 16 and a half years, the local exchange was the domain of chief operator Mrs. R. Soper, a Canby native and the daughter of early Oregon pioneers, along with her own daughter and assistant, Miss Rena Hutchinson. But Mrs. Soper, whom newspapers described as a most capable and obliging, resigned in August of 1922 to be nearer to her two sons, Earl and Alan Hutchinson, who were businessmen in Newburgh. She was replaced by the wife of Canby farmer John E. Wells, with assistance from their daughters, Mabel and Sylvia. The women's labor earned $1,800 all year, all of which went to Mrs. Wells, according to the Oregonian. "Have you got your ears to the air?" the Canby Herald asked in 1922. "Thousands have. Enthusiasm over the wireless telephone is spreading tremendously." If you thought 1922 was a little early for wireless telephone technology, you're not alone. Of course, what the newspaper was talking about was not really a telephone at all, but rather the radio. From a fad and a toy, the radio receiving set had become a household convenience, the paper continued. Out of the air come daily news bulletins, lectures, sermons, vocal and instrumental concerts, operas, market reports, church services, and children's bedtime stories. Local news streaming through the air, straight to your personal devices? Imagine that. I guess it's true what they say, the more things change, the more they stay the same. The growth the co-op enjoyed during its first 3.5 decades were overseen by one steady hand, that of J.W. Smith, who served as its president from 1904 to his retirement in 1938, with one or two breaks in there that were richly deserved. Although not the cause of his retirement, a contributing factor may have been the growing complaints throughout the 1930s from people talking too long on the party lines. For those unfamiliar with the concept, party lines were essentially the reply all of the pre-email days, and every bit as annoying. The co-op also received 240 complaints in that decade for bad operator services. On March 11, 1939, the skills of the Canby Cooperative telephone lineman, James Mooney, would be needed for a job he never anticipated. That morning, Captain H.A. Reynolds of the Army Air Corps Reserve was flying his single-engine military training plane in the vicinity of Canby airspace when icing on the motor forced him to bail out. Fortunately, the Pearson Field, Vancouver-based pilot, had a parachute. What he didn't have was a clear open field to land in, so he wound up stuck in a tall fir tree on Oscar Olson's farm about a mile outside the city, where he stayed almost an hour before rescuers brought him down. Or should I say rescuer, singular. The hero was Mooney, who donned high climber's gear and installed block and tackle to reach the stranded aviator whose chute had caught on a limb 100 feet above the ground. Captain Reynolds proceeded to shout for help, drawing a startled Oscar Olson from out of his barn. The Herald recounted, Olson went to the farmhouse of A.B. Cole and called for the telephone lineman to aid Reynolds down from his perch, where he sat nonchalantly smoking. The captain was unhurt, except perhaps for his pride, and none the worse for his experience, the newspaper recorded. Mooney rigged up a harness and pulley system, and the aviator was safely lowered to the ground by several men in the gathered crowd below. In the 1940s, the company's name was shortened to the Canby Telephone Association, or CTA. The little independent co-op had grown to 4 employees and 515 telephone lines. All 4 employees, along with most of the rest of the city, were active participants throughout the early 1940s in blackout drills used to practice the town's preparedness for an air raid by Imperial Japanese warplanes. On October 28, 1941, decoy bombers flew over the observation station located on the farm of one Clem Dietz. The smooth operator of the Canby telephone office reportedly received and relayed the message to the Portland headquarters in less than 30 seconds. Well, telephones were never more needed in Canby than the time a small boy riding alone on a Greyhound bus wound up in the right city, but the wrong state in 1947. That story and more next time on Canby Then. Until then, friends, thank you so much for listening. I'm James Walton. Have a great day.
This episode is brought to you by the Wild Hair Saloon in Canby in Oregon City. The coronavirus has changed much about how the Wild Hair does business, but it has not changed the where, the why, or who they do it for. Owners Joan and Darren Monin, both lifelong Canby residents, are as committed to the community they love as they've ever been. Even as the service industry has been deeply impacted by the current public health situation, they continue to rally behind Canby, its people, and especially those most in need. We are so grateful for their continued support in this difficult time. As we've always said, the Wild Hair is a place where Canby goes to eat and have fun. That hasn't really changed. You just have to take your food and, you know, go eat it somewhere else. Until the governor's stay-home orders expire, the Wild Hair's friendly staff will be there to handle your carryout orders Monday through Friday from 11:30 a.m. to 7:30 p.m. They continue to offer their full menu of delicious food options, and they're doing a weekly meal deal that serves a family of 4 for only $25. Find the latest on their Facebook page, full menu available online at thewildhairsaloon.net. Give them a holler today at 503-651-4273.
The Canby Now podcast is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. Find more of her work at olivia13.com.
The Canby Now podcast is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The Canby Now podcast is a production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe, and we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.